Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday, the 9th of June. I will cut right to the chase. Rosemary Armeo is back in the house.
Yay! Now, happy to be here.
Now, here's the thing. We heard all week long last week during the fun drive about Mike and Libby and all of our wonderful contributors and Judy and people who come in and love the panel. I know it's not a contest, Mike, but I just have to say that everybody was like, I love Rosemary and how she gives it to everybody. And Rosemary's a pip. We got a couple of those.
A pip.
I think that's a positive thing.
A positive thing? Yeah. Pip is
Rosemary's
positive?
A pip.
I don't think it's pejorative.
Okay. And then there were the number of people who thought that because you hadn't been on for a while, that either we had fired you had fired us.
Nope. I've just been busy with my alternative lives, and I'm back now.
I like the plural.
Yeah, yes.
So are you a spy?
No, I am not a spy.
Let's cut to the chase.
Yeah.
I just, and again, maybe this is telling tales out of school, but I would write Rosemary and I'd say, oh, you know, we're all set. And she'd go, oh, okay, well, I'll be back. I'll be back on Thursday. And then I'd write Thursday and she goes, well, I'm still in training, whatever that means. And then
It's a
buzzword.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, I don't know what she's being trained for. But anyway, you're back and that's all that counts.
Are you carrying?
I'm helping to improve journalism around the world.
You don't look like you're carrying.
She is training investigative journalists in third world countries where they really need them and where they're at enormous risk.
I couldn't have said it better.
All right. Well, we thank you for your service, and we thank you for your service here, and it's great to have you back. WAMC's Alan Chartok, good morning, sir. How are you?
Yo.
Fine. Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is back as well. Been 2 weeks because of the fun drive, so great to have you back.
Happy to be here.
And again, her name, in case if you're first time listening to the program, SUNY Albany Journalism Professor and Investigative Reporter Rosemary Armeo
is back,
and thank you. All right. Right, so we welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Let's talk to the big story about the big story. This is still the big story. I know, Mike, you have some local perspective on this as well from the Times Union, and it's all we've been talking about in the last 20 minutes or so since we got together, the panel, and that is the continued search for the two murderers who escaped from the prison in Dannemora, and the search goes on, and there are people who are being brought into question, and there are various, obviously, an intense investigation going on, not only into finding the two individuals, but of course to find out what happened and how it happened, and I guess that's the most interesting part of the story. We talked about it vaguely yesterday and focused mostly, we talked about it at length yesterday, but we talked mostly about the escape itself and the fact that the governor was very much was talking at the risk of the state and the scary nature of this. And so what do we know? What's the latest here, Mike?
Well, our reporter, Keisha Klucki, has been up in Dannemora since the weekend, and she's working with our investigative editor, Brendan Lyons, and they've come up with a couple of interesting things that's getting a lot of attention now, and that is that these two inmates, David Sweat and Richard Matt, were exemplary inmates, if you will. In other words, they only had one minor infraction on their record, and that was early on when they went to this Clinton Correctional Facility, you know, a high-security prison just close to the Canadian border in New York State. And they were allowed a lot of freedom on their unit. They were able to cook sometimes. They were able to go visit other inmates in their cells during certain hours. They were allowed to not wear prison green. They were able to wear other kind of street clothes. And they had earned that by their exemplary behavior. However,
it's always the quiet ones.
However, both who were convicted of killing people, and that's why they were there, they were evidently plotting this for some time. There's a woman who is a person of suspicion, or person of interest, as they like to say, hasn't been formally charged. She was a civilian employee in the tailor shop, at the prison, and purportedly had a relationship with one of them. They left behind love letters that implicated her in at least having a connection in that sense, and there is speculation that perhaps she might have been somebody who facilitated them in their plan. The big question, of course, is how did they get power tools? How did they cut through a steel wall? And how did they break into a pipe and climb through that and know where that pipe went? It just seems a lot of inside information must have been known. And clearly, this was the kind of thing they must have been focusing on for a long time.
Is it safe to say that this is an incredibly rare case? I mean, the reason we're so fascinated by this is because this is, while it's not rare to read about this in a fiction account or in a movie or television, but for real life, this kind of thing is really quite extraordinary.
Sure it is. I mean, it never happened here since the Civil War. They haven't had a breakout in this facility. 1865, right?
That's right. They have other parts of Dannemora, in Dannemora, of the Clinton Correctional Facility, where there's work release programs. They have had a few people walk away from it and stuff like that. But not in the high security area. No, there hasn't been a breakout since it opened.
I'm still wowed by the fact that it was built during this, right after the Civil War. That's astounding.
Yeah.
Well, they were doing some renovations, and that could actually, obviously, been upgraded many times. But they could, that evidently the renovations that have been going on.
Oh, no, I think they should get some credit for this. It's like if they catch them, instead of adding to the sentence, it should be reduced, because that's pretty smart. Can't you use this kind of intelligence for the good of society? I think it's amazing.
They're murderers.
I was just going to say.
They're murderers.
Yeah, but maybe there's, rehabilitation. I don't know. There's some engineering skill involved here, right?
Yeah, well, okay, they can do it in prison.
I love having Rosemary back.
Well, where are we going to keep them? Let's put them in like some other place and see if you can get out of here.
That's outrageous.
Hire thieves in libraries to figure out how to stop book thieves.
So
let me figure out how they work. Yeah, same thing.
Since we have Rosemary on this train of thought, let me throw this out, which I think is fascinating, because there is a segment of the population, and I would even dare to say a fairly large segment of the population, or larger than I would expect there to be, where they're like rooting them on. That people are saying, please don't leave clothes out, please don't leave food and so forth too. And we've seen this in cases where even locally, I remember Joel O'Keefe years ago. Remember that, mm-hmm. Mike?
He was on the run. He had escaped in Saratoga County and was, picked up
in Bennington, Vermont, in a subway shop.
What had he done?
It was not to this level of crime, but it was serious, and it was and he got out like several times. He had broken out, but there again,
but he was in for weapons charges and marijuana.
Right. Yeah. And people were rooting him on, and helping him. But we've already heard stories of where the local authorities have said, in that region, please, do not leave stuff out.
Do not feed the murderers.
Right.
Well, even Bucky Phillips, and he was the horrible, he had assassinated essentially some state troopers and shot them and killed one of them and shot and injured seriously another one. And he was on the run in western New York and northern Pennsylvania. I mean, there were people that were suspected of aiding him in his, eluding police. There's some kind of sympathy for these people.
We cheer the underdog. This is a long tradition in both reality and in fiction. Great Expectations is all built on an escaped prisoner. It's Robin Hood is based on the bad guy who ultimately is noble.
Yeah, but they were innocent. These guys are convicted heinous murderers, and it's one of the reasons that people make the argument there ought to be a death penalty, because this kind of thing doesn't happen.
Yeah, I don't think this one aberration. This is truly an aberration in New York State prison history. that a high security person is escaping. But there is this sort of denial that these are killers. I agree, Alan, and we shouldn't forget that. And when you see the vivid, video and the photos that have been published of the state troopers doing the roadblocks, you know that any car that comes up or any of these tractor trailers that they check out, there could be a guy in there with a gun aimed right at them.
Absolutely.
That's a frightening thought.
Okay, I admit to all this, and please, I don't want to hear from people who think I'm like cheering on the murderers. However, you've got images of police highly armed shooting innocent people or unarmed people, and then you have these two guys who do, the same thing that Tim, what's his face, did in the movie.
Tim Robbins.
Did in Shawshank Redemption. Why? Of course we're cheering him on.
But
it
again,
is romantically.
He was not guilty.
He was innocent.
Yeah,
he was framed.
Yeah.
He was framed by a crooked
wife. Dead wife.
Dead wife. The dead wife did it.
Okay.
But it's like a real, it's like a movie coming to life. I am utterly fascinated by it. It is a problem I cover, corruption, where you have mafiosa who are ruling really all vast sections of the world, and we cheer on mafiosas like we do in the Godfather movies, that they're wonderful, interesting people. But the bad guys are more interesting than the cops.
Well, let's take a break.
I want to disassociate myself from everything that Rosemary just said.
We need to give you like your own comment line.
I say things that other people think.
Well, no, they think them, but it's not.
And then think better of saying.
Well, it does get romanticized.
Look,
no question.
It is true. I mean, we heard from the state police yesterday, asking people, pleading with people not to. Even consciously or unconsciously to aid in any way. And there seems to be an effort by many people. There were some people that were putting out clothes and food and so forth
I asked my 90-year-old mother what she would do if suddenly they appeared at the patio door.
What'd she say?
She said she'd probably die of shock.
Nah.
Jeez. Okay, let me ask
what
you.
What would you do?
What would you do?
I would help them and then call the police.
I wouldn't
risk my
life. That's counterintuitive,
No.
You would help them.
You wouldn't become a hero and try to capture
them.
I see.
Of the four of us, only I would.
You would what?
Try to capture them.
What would you?
Implements would you use to?
I take my necktie off and I turn around.
Okay, I just wondered.
Garrot them.
You'd interview him. Sit down. I just want 20 minutes. We'll ask a few questions. You can talk.
Yeah.
And then
he'd
text the cops, right, while you're talking to them cleverly and have them show up and take them away.
Wouldn't you like to interview them, though? Come on.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely. Well, you want to know what happened. You want to know what it goes. As much as I know about what they did because of the governor's dry run of it, of going through the...
That was cute, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't cute. To me,
I thought it was really genuine.
Go ahead, Joe. Tell us what it looked like to you, Joe.
To me, it looked like Michael Dukakis wearing the helmet and the tank. That's what it looked like to me.
He sure got up there fast, I'll tell you that much.
He had to
give up going to the Belmont Stakes.
Yeah, he missed seeing it.
Some said he was looking for any excuse not to go to a horse race.
I'm not saying that he shouldn't have done it. I'm not saying, just the pictures that they released, that the governor's office released, just seemed to me to be a little strange. But
I have to agree with Joe. I mean, I think, the idea of his going up there was correct. He should have gone up there. But I don't think he had to go through, as Joe said, the dry run of crawling through the same pipes to show that he was,
I liked it. It's what I would have done, and I'm glad he did it. And I like the way he described it, too, as amazing and definitely extraordinary, he said.
I want to disassociate myself from what Rosemary
said. Everything Rosemary says. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's some value to politically by saying that this was an extraordinary feat. It was, an aberration. It was different than whatever happened. It doesn't look like we're to blame. These guys were just extremely clever and had inside help.
And I do think, because he originally said that he felt that it, there was, must have taken a few days to figure this out. Well, and then I guess he was saying to actually do it, as opposed to, and then he clarified and said, well, it must have been, planning it for months, or if not years. You have to have a whole lot of information to be able
to do that. Funny line to the other inmates about, well, you must have been really sleeping deeply because you didn't hear anything. I thought he said a lot of what people are talking about among ourselves.
But
now,
once again, aren't you fascinated if it's true that somebody who had a love interest with him
Yes.
Helped them. at what point does somebody think, you know, if this gets found out, I'm going to be in jail for at least 20 years. That's a lot. But I guess love conquers all.
Love
right?
conquers all.
I don't know. That's such a cliche. I want to hear more about that. What? Why? What could she have done?
She hasn't been charged. She hasn't been charged.
This has just been floated.
Yeah.
Right.
Not even be that. It may be that she just had a fantasy with this one prisoner and wrote him love letters, period.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, Michael said, Rosemary wouldn't be utterly fascinated, in quotes, if the person these guys killed was someone she loved, and that's from Michael.
Well, actually, I am kind of fascinated by that. The relatives of one of his victims is quite upset, as of course they would be, and that is part of the story. This is a fascinating journalism story. That doesn't mean I approve of it. I just am. I want to read everything about it. Yeah, ripping yarn. Good line.
By the way, and I believe it's probably in the newspaper, but if you go to NewYorkTimes.com, they have a map, an overhead map of the facility. And they show where the gentlemen were, the cell, and then the manhole cover, which is really far away outside of the facility of where they got out. And it is fascinating. I mean, when you put it in that perspective of how far it is and how complicated, it's really something.
Right.
You have another letter and then...
Oh, yeah. Okay. Don, our good friend and frequent correspondent, said, wait a second. According to the 2,000-year-old man, Robin Hood stole from the rich and from the poor and kept it all himself.
Right. He was not innocent.
He was not innocent.
Yes. All right. Let's take a break. We'll be back and continue our conversation after this break.
Like the stars chase the sun.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Let me reintroduce the panel. Dr. Alan Chartok is with us. Rosemary Armeo returns, SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter, and the associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. Make up our group this morning. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome you to join us and your thoughts. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org, where we get letters like these.
Yes, indeed. Jeff says there will always, in capital letters, be prison escapes because the prisoners are spending 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of thinking how to get out, while the guards are only spending 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, thinking about how to keep them in. And that's best regards. Our friend Julia says, okay, these two were murderers and received life sentences, but what are your real feelings about others who have committed crimes and have served their terms? Do you believe in rehabilitation, resuming a normal place in society again? In our society, prison terms seem to mark one for life. They certainly do.
That's a good letter.
Well, and when you call it the Clinton Correctional Facility, there is an idea there, an implication.
A subtle suggestion.
Yes, that you are correcting the behavior of the human being that you're putting into that facility.
Well, and that's fiction, of course.
Absolutely.
We know it's a penal institution,
yes.
I believe.
We know it. But on the other hand, I have been speaking for months about this idea of, okay, you don't want to give a death penalty? I get it. Because I'm always stopped by the fact that some people who didn't do it have been, executed. There are still three dead people or four dead people lying there. And I don't believe that when you say we'll put them in jail with no possibility of parole, that you should then parole. And that's what I think anyway, for whatever it's worth. But that's not every crime. That's just, death penalty crime.
I think our sentences for everything are incredibly long and dire. Sirhan Sirhan is, how many decades now has he been in jail for a murder?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, not enough.
Yeah, no, I mean, doesn't that...
No other industrialized nation puts people away for so long, and they do become desperate. These guys... One reason they're so incredibly dangerous right now is that they have no possibility of parole. So why not go for broke? There is no hope for them.
Well, in South Africa, Pistorius, who was convicted of homicide, not murder, but homicide, might be paroled as early as this fall.
Two wrongs don't make a right. Yeah. Okay, Michael says to Joe, you referred to them as, quote, gentlemen. They are not gentlemen. They are ruffians and criminals.
Well, I didn't want to say the word thugs because that's too loaded.
Oh, okay.
New York Times
calls
them.
Well, they are gentlemen.
Mister.
Yeah, gentlemen and ladies, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
somebody,
ladies and gentlemen.
Somebody left this glass, this round piece of glass.
I know. We don't know what they are. Some sort of science experiment.
And every day, whoever is on the round table comes in and puts them into their eye and tries to make a monocle.
They're regular glasses. There's no magnification at all. They're just glass.
Yeah, just perfect pieces of glass. Yeah. I don't know what they're from.
Nicely cut.
Yeah,
and Rachel said, "No, dear Rosemary, I have to speak out. I have to speak out.
Okay,
I'm not cheering on these men. I don't idolize the bad guys. I think they are damaged and dangerous, and that what they did is atrocious. The media, in the end, it's the media who is responsible for glorifying the bad guys. The general public that fall for that would cheer these two men on." Put themselves in a position of someone who might lose their life by these men. Exactly.
And we are the media, and we certainly are not cheering them. I don't know where this idea comes from. We cover it.
You were sort of cheering them a little bit.
I am fascinated by what they did.
Acknowledging a fascination with what happened.
You guys are always shilling for each other. But I didn't read Rachel's last two words.
Okay, Rachel,
which were incredibly important.
Yes, get to those, please.
She said, "Go, Alan."
Yeah. pandering letter writers.
Please. And then somebody, I'm not going to read it, but somebody wrote us, attached the shocking description of the crime for which escapees were incarcerated. Nothing funny or romantic about these guys.
Which is absolutely true. There are heinous crimes that they committed.
And then Scott wrote us and said, somewhat humorously, I'm sure, "I thought Cuomo was picking out his cell during the prison break visit." That's not fair. Cuomo was just looking for national publicity. Large and in charge, and that's from Scott.
And that's Mike and I disagree with that. If you're the governor of a state where there's been a breakout like this at a serious prison, you need to say something.
Show up.
You need to be in front. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on.
Okay. We move on. Although we continue to talk about our criminal justice system. We move to South Carolina, the North Charleston, South Carolina police officer who fatally shot Walter Scott as he fled a traffic stop this year was indicted by a grand jury Monday on a charge of murder. This indictment comes 2 months after Michael Slager was charged with murder for shooting and killing Scott, an event recorded by a bystander cell phone and shared widely on cable news and social media. Slager was arrested April 7th and fired from the North Charleston Police Department. Scarlett Wilson, the prosecutor for Charleston County, announced the indictment at a news conference Monday morning, but she said there still is no timetable for when the trial will occur.
Okay, well, I have to switch here because I don't condone what he did. I think he deserves this indictment of murder, but you still have to feel sorry for him. His wife has just had a baby. He is a young man who has now ruined his career and possibly his life. And so I do have a certain amount of sympathy for that, too.
The two things struck me about the story when I initially saw it was that it took me a moment to identify which one this was. Wow.
Absolutely right. Wow.
You know,
it's
to a point where, you know, it's become, well, not commonplace exactly, but certainly frequent enough that you do have to now search your memory bank as to, which one was this?
Yeah.
But this is running away in eight shots, right? Is that right?
Shot him in the back and then said, he was struggling with me, and only the bystander who had the video caught
it. Raises the question, had there not been a bystander videotaping this, and it was his word against the dead man's, being there, what would the situation be right now? There would have been an inquest of some kind into it, but he probably
would have gotten away with it.
Could it turned out otherwise?
Well, it may end up being, of course, that there are juries in this world who will not convict a police officer.
There's some suggestion in this story, it's subtle, that they wouldn't give details about how long or by what vote the grand jury decided to indict him, suggesting that perhaps there was a dissent even within the grand jury room.
And meanwhile, in Cleveland, that was the case where they shot the young boy in the park. He had a pellet gun. They thought it was a real gun. The grand jury has gone on so long that community leaders now want to go directly to judges and ask for a charge.
Which apparently is allowable under the law.
It's allowable in Ohio, yeah.
But again, again, to look at the other side of that, if you're the grand jury and you know what you're getting yourself into, this is going to take some time, isn't
it? Yeah, I don't think that's something you do lightly. And how about the other case that is really fascinating to me is just coming out was in Dallas.
Yes.
A municipal pool had a party and a bunch of black teenagers got out of control. There was a fight. So the cops call and one of them in particular just went berserk. The video, again, we have a video.
And that was all over TV last night on cable news.
Yeah, slamming down a 14-year-old girl and pointing
a bathing
gun.
Suit. And I mean, I don't know.
Your knee in her back.
Jumping on top of her. The father is furious, as
well,
I would be.
And most upset because someone was taking a video.
Yeah. Again, had there not been a video, it would have been people's words against the credible word of a police officer who is often, they give deference to their testimony and they believe them. And they should, because most police officers are telling the truth.
Even with the video, there are plenty of people, black and white, who are saying, no, the cops were justified. It was crazy there and they were trying to get things under control. So then you go back to the grand juries. These things are not cut and dry.
And remembering that prosecutors have all of the advantage.
I saw the video of the South Carolina, the North Charleston, South Carolina case, and I don't know how anything could be more cut and dry than that.
Right. That was shocking. This is going back to our original guy in South Carolina.
And here again, I mean, this, not to add another layer to this of discussion, but there was the dashboard cam and that video, which really tells one story, and then the video that was provided by the bystander
when they're in the field. Right.
That's right, which shows a much different story, and as you said, it makes it quite cut and dried at that point. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll move on to a couple of other stories. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back after this.
Support comes from H. Houston Son True Value, Woodstock, New York. Since 1932, a local hardware store for summer projects and grills and party supplies for outdoor fun. True Value, behind every project is a true value. HHoust.com. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a community-owned natural grocery store dedicated to sustainable agriculture, the local economy, and the environment. Berkshire.coop. And Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga. InterimHealthcare.com.
I belong to the ground now, and it belongs to me. And oh Lord, won't you leave me? Leave me just like this, 'cause I belong to the ground now. I want no more than this. And how I long for the odor, the sun keeps burning me. Every stone in this city keeps
Florence and the Machine, new album. Is that from the new album? Very cool. It's called How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful.
Nice.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Beautiful voice. All right. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. The group is here. We have Alan and Rosemary and Mike and Joe and Bob and Ted and Alice. And we're all here and we're ready for your comments, and we'll move on before we get a couple. We have a couple letters and then we'll move on to other stories.
Hi, Roundtable team. On the subject of criminal justice system, will you discuss the story of Khalif Broder on the Rikers Island tragedy? He just committed suicide. That was terrible. They kept him there with no charge
He was incarcerated for almost 3 years without having been charged. He was a teenager, and he was kept in solitary confinement for two of those 3 years.
To make no mistake about it, this Rikers situation is terrible, really awful.
It is terrible. Horrible. It's a disgrace.
And then, on top of that, we got one saying... we did that one already. Per your discussion, aren't correction facility for behavior correction could be the citizens conclude that only corrected inmates are released? If so, why can't corrected inmates bear arms? The Second Amendment to the Constitution just does not forbid felons from bearing arms. Just an interesting observation from Andy. Eric says, Rosemary and Alan in a jail cell for a week.
A reality show idea. Yeah, that could work.
I'll bring you a cake with a file in it.
Yeah.
Do you think
Alan wouldn't eat it because he's on diets all the time.
That's true.
There's a thing.
It would sit there until your sentence was over.
So do you think the two of them would work together to get out of the cell, or do you think that they would do
We would discuss a lot.
Oh, do you think you would discuss?
We would discuss it
You
deeply.
Don't think it would come to fisticuffs?
No.
Okay.
Never.
You love this woman. I love her.
I love this
she
man.
She adds so much to this program. She does.
She's changed my life.
Mike is playing an imaginary violin.
Or as Libby said on the air the other day, she got up and gave a speech and she said, you know, Alan takes credit for everything I've become. And then she said to the group, he's also taking credit for my becoming a lesbian.
Let's quickly move on and go to another story. And let's talk about the Supreme Court of the United States, the passport ruling. This is basically a win for the president, correct?
It is. Yeah. It upholds his executive authority to basically, you know, lead foreign policy.
Struck down as unconstitutional Monday, a congressional attempt to allow Americans born in the contested city of Jerusalem to list Israel as their birthplace on passports, affirming the principle that the president alone has the power to recognize foreign nations.
So look, the Republicans were playing politics. They clearly decided that they would have an advantage with Jewish voters. One can hardly blame them for it, that everybody's always trying to figure this one out. By saying you can list your birthplace as Jerusalem on your passport.
It's Israel, if you were born in Jerusalem,
Israel, yeah, I'm so sorry.
It undercuts the Palestinian claims or Arab claims to the city.
Yeah. Which the United States has stayed neutral about for decades.
Right.
And
it
that's how they
neutral.
Parse it out as they try to, you know, negotiate peace.
I thought it was good that the Supreme Court ruled 6-3 on this.
Yes.
It wasn't close.
But Clarence Thomas doesn't agree with anybody. He just didn't agree with this either.
Yeah. You
know? Wait a second. Wasn't Clarence Thomas on the
majority?
The president? Yeah, the majority.
The majority just doesn't agree with the reasoning. He did it for thoughts of his own.
Yeah, he was in his own conclusion.
Yeah.
For reasons.
So, in other Supreme Court news, the president was in Germany yesterday for the G7 summit, and during a press availability said a decision by the Supreme Court to strike down health care subsidies in a federally run marketplace would be, quote, a contorted reading of the Affordable Care Act that would disrupt coverage for millions of people, according to the president. At a news conference at the end of the two-day trip to Germany, he expressed optimism, however, that the justices who are set to announce a decision on a challenge to the subsidies this month will let his signature domestic achievement stand.
Well, he stood up there. I watched it, and we played it. By the way, we played that press conference. And he was extraordinarily articulate about the success of the program, of the Obamacare, although he doesn't call it that. He calls it the Affordable Health Care Act. I've always thought he should call it that because it is his signature program. And he said, look, all these people are on. People are getting health care for the first time. You're not being able to deny people coverage for all kinds of different reasons. And I thought it was terrific. He may know what we don't know.
Well, you should remember, this was in a 10,000-page document, a bill that created the Affordable Health Care Program. There was a glitch, an error.
A wording glitch.
A wording glitch. Mm-hmm. And it was quite clear from the other 9,000-plus pages that were surrounding this that what the intent was. But based on this apparent editing error, a case has all gone all the way to the Supreme Court that would, if it's interpreted literally— would let states opt out of it. And
it would undermine the bill.
Yeah, yes, it would undermine the bill.
And I think
and millions of Americans who now have health care would lose it, potentially.
I think it's a political statement he made, setting up the Supreme Court to look as bad as it would be if it took this action. On the other hand, it's an opinion that's been copied, but that's been voiced by a number of other constitutional scholars. The Supreme Court has a record of ruling in regards to intent of the legislation, and the intent of this legislation is not to let the states opt out.
Right, and they could cop out by saying, let's just send it back to Congress to have them repair it, which they would not do now.
Right,
because
which
it's
would
very
end
different
it.
Congress.
That would also do it. Yeah. That one scares me. I can see them doing that because that would allow them to hold their principles up. You could see the conservatives doing that, but it would also have the operative effect of undermining the act. What scares me.
You see, I see the whole thing a little bit differently, you guys. You guys are arguing it on the merits. I happen to think a good deal of this is political positioning by the various justices. After all, Roberts was appointed by the conservatives. He did this one thing, which is to uphold the act. And now, he's always been regarded with a little bit of suspicion because he did what they didn't want him to do. So this gives him an opportunity to undo his... yes.
Except that the way he upheld the act, Alan, was to undermine the bill needs all the states to be involved. He said, no, the states can opt out if they want. Doesn't this new act, this new case, it follows up on that. Mm. He has come out already as saying the states get to decide, not the federal government. And that could be the undoing of affordable health care.
Would be a shame.
We want to move on?
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
We do.
Very good. What would you like to discuss? Would you like to talk about...
Talk about me.
Okay. Alan?
We already did that.
Just go ahead.
You want to talk about MERS?
About MERS. MERS.
Let's talk about
scary story.
MERS.
That's terrible.
Again, we have a lot of misdiagnosis here, this is a great problem, obviously, in South Korea and in South Korean hospitals, and it is known, MERS is known as Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, possibly caused by incomplete information from the patient about his travels, the original misdiagnosis. Now the World Health Organization has acknowledged that MERS is not an easy virus to identify early because its symptoms are similar to other respiratory infections like a common cold, but it was especially problematic in South Korea because of peculiarities in the hospital system, according to health experts.
This is a real killer. No two ways about it. And I know that every healthcare facility in the United States is scared to death of this one. And has been for years. It didn't start this week with the latest outbreak in South Korea. So there are signs on hospital emergency rooms. I saw one recently, which say, if you have a cold, if you have this, if you have that, please tell the nurse. If you've been in a foreign country, please tell the nurse, the admitting nurse. So this is really scaring our hospitals because all it takes is one, and then boom, it takes off.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of Ebola. We are now in a global community, a global climate, and disease any place is a danger to us. And we don't quite have our act together on how to treat that, how to prevent that.
Well, the traditional drugs, antibiotics, don't always work on this.
Yeah.
And five hospitals, correct? It all basically links to five hospitals within South Korea, and of the... of the cases, which I think there are 30 official or something, but obviously killed as many as 300 with, this most recent.
Yeah.
So, scary stuff. We'll obviously be talking much more about that in the days and weeks to come. And we'll end with another story about the Cuomo administration and the wrap-up of this session. And I just like saying the word big ugly.
The big ugly.
The big ugly.
You know, the big ugly, just so you know, it refers to a term when at the end of the legislative session, when completely or just very tangential bills in the legislature get linked. And that's the story today, that two very different bills, one which would continue or perhaps upgrade the rent control and the housing subsidy bill
in
New York City, which is extremely important to middle-class residents.
I want you to interrupt for a second to tell you,
yes,
they have some Republican senators down there in New York City, and there is nothing that will get a Republican senator unelected as quickly as saying to somebody, you get kicked out of your apartment. So I think, you know, that is one they can't do. And then there's the other thing that you're talking about here, we're about to talk about, which is allowing people to have vouchers to send their kids to or tax deductions to send their kids to parochial school.
Well,
and that's something we've always tried to avoid. And linking those two together is despicable.
Well, a lot of people are agreeing with you that it's an unfair way for the governor to leverage support for the bill that would provide tax credits to individuals who make large contributions to public and private schools. A lot of people see that as a way for the wealthy to essentially, they'll get up to 75% of it as a tax break and by making a donation to private schools. And certainly the New York State United Teachers is against that tax credit proposal. But that passage of that, which the governor supports very much,
indeed,
and private and parochial schools, the Diocese of Albany, the Bishop of Albany supports it. Certainly the Cardinal in New York supports it because it would help. It would encourage wealthy people to make large contributions to support the parochial schools, and in return, 75% of that would be tax deductible. And essentially, that money would not go into the state treasury, and it would not go towards public schools. That's the argument that the United Teachers makes. And
well,
that's being linked to the housing bill.
Look, we've had a long tradition in this state of not allowing vouchers or money for parochial schools to. And it keeps coming up, and here's the governor, for whatever his political reasons, he's doing it. Once again, it's a terrible idea. You know, this is obviously a first step towards the next step, which would be the vouchers.
Yeah, and there's an aspect of it that would give middle-class families, people making less, I think, than $60,000 a year, to get a $500 tax credit if they send their kids to private or parochial schools.
First step.
Right, and that's, you know, a lot of people are more sympathetic to that, but the other side of it is the one that gets the criticism, that lets the wealthy and benefit enormously from a tax break if they give money to support non-public schools.
You know, Mike, I tend to disagree with the way you're phrasing this. You keep saying private and parochial schools. Just for the sake
30
of this,
seconds,
you should
ahead.
Be saying parochial and private schools, because after all, that's really what it's all about.
Okay, parochial and private schools. Let that be corrected.
All right. And with that correction, we are out of time. But I want to thank everyone for being here, especially Rosemary.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it seems.
Because I'm here.
Because it's often. Because it's often difficult.
I'm going to bake you a cake.
Get ready for the prison cell.
I just have to ask you on the air. You'll be here tomorrow?
I'll be here tomorrow.
Okay, great.
I'll be here tomorrow. On time.
Okay.
Unless she's not.
We'll see you all.
I may call you later.
Thank you very much. You're listening to the Roundtable on WMC.